This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. Hope you're well.
Boker Tov, an interesting report was issued earlier this week by the state comptroller. And the report investigates the threat of foreign interference in Israel's upcoming elections, which is due to take place, as I understand, the current date that has been bandied about in the press is October the 27th. And the state controller decided that it was important enough to do an investigation and to issue a report about the threat of foreign interference into the Israeli elections. Mm-hmm. And the state controller has found that the government has no national policy to combat this issue, and that Iran and other hostile actors are apparently, according to his report, systematically exploiting social media in order to deepen social divisions in Israel and to spread some panic and to manipulate public's perception about the reality of what's happening, about political parties and what they're up to, and therefore to try to somehow influence the way that people will vote in October. And this is a very interesting new kind of social media problem, because at one point there was some concern that foreign actors might be more technically involved in somehow infiltrating systems in order to misrepresent the votes that have been counted, so that ultimately the result is not exactly as was voted for in the ballot boxes, but somehow has been manipulated. But that's really not the case. The point is here, and the manipulation comes within social media and within the public, about how people perceive the situation and how people see different political parties and what their responses to various different situations might be, and therefore influence people to cast a different vote when they
Anthony,
go to the ballot box.
Anthony, this isn't... I'm just surprised that they'd even need to make this as a comment. This has been happening for years. We see this in the United States. We've seen the strategy pretty much since Vietnam. It's been a very, very common and well-used strategy, one that's actually been used following October 7th quite extensively. Is this just something that the Israeli government has just woken up to?
Well, I don't know that the Israeli government has really just woken up to it. And in fairness, I don't know what strategy could be put in place.
Well, that's the other part of it, because it's quite nebulous in terms of defining it. You know, you could have somebody who feels genuinely about what they are writing. It doesn't mean they're interfering.
Well, that's the point, you see. And once you, even if you identify somebody as interfering, are you considered to be interfering by somehow responding to that and potentially being held to account for, you know, misrepresentation when you are an interested party? I mean, the government in this case is an interested party in the election because they obviously stand for election and they wish to be reelected. So everything that they're saying and doing clearly comes under scrutiny because of the fact that they are interested and they have a very real interest in the outcome of this. And is there really an entity in Israel that could objectively stand up and say, look, we have no interest in the outcome of this, but our interest is simply to make sure that whatever is being consumed within the public domain and within social media is fairly represented. But there is no such thing, because everybody comes with a predetermined view and with a certain angle that they're trying to promote. And so we're going into the realm of, we don't really know what is real and what's not real. And we saw this so much during the recent wars that we've been fighting, when we've been told and advised certain things, and everybody has to think, how real, how accurate is this piece of information that we are being given? And the truth of the matter is, I don't know if we ever really get to find out whether what we were told and what we believed was true or not true. But it's increasingly difficult to go down to the facts and to take out all the nebulous kind of information that seems to surround everything in order to try to form people's views. I find it enormously difficult, because I'm trying to stick to facts, even though I do add my point of view and try and make it quite clear where my point of view comes in. But I find it enormously difficult to say, what I'm telling you right now is absolute fact. I know that that's happened, and I've fact-checked it, and I've done everything I can, because the information that we're being fed is just so inflated and so angled towards a certain narrative that it's incredibly difficult to know really what the realities are.
Absolutely. Very, very strange. But, I do hear it. It's just, one has to be a bit cautious as well. The U.S. military has carried out extensive attacks against Iranian forces in southern Iran. That's, of course, in response to a number of oil tankers having been attacked by Iran in the Strait of Hormuz yesterday. This seems to me to be a significant escalation. What's going on here?
Well, I think it's a significant escalation in the sense that something like more than 80 targets were attacked last night by the U.S. Central Command in southern Iran. Iranian air defense systems, command and control centers, radar sites, anti-ship launch capabilities, the list of targets goes on and on. Most of them located either in the Bandar Abbas port area or on Keshem Island or on Sirik Island, all of which are around the area of the Straits of Hormuz. And we know that that's in response to the fact that the Iranians attacked, I think, 5 oil tankers all in all yesterday afternoon, who were apparently using the route that the Iranian National Guard, Revolutionary Guard, has not authorized, that route that goes near to the coast of Oman, rather than the route that has been officially authorized by the Revolutionary Guard closer to the coast of Iran. But the thing that really surprises me more than anything about these attacks that were carried out by the United States is that they report that more than 60 speedboats of the Revolutionary Guard that operated in the Strait of Hormuz and around that area were also destroyed. This comes, of course, after President Trump has said the Iranian Navy is at the bottom of the sea, and yet yesterday as many as 60 speedboats were actually attacked and destroyed. And so one wonders how many are still left after those 60 have been destroyed. And even though these might not necessarily be ocean-going naval vessels, they are clearly part of a naval force that polices the area of the Straits of Hormuz. Is this a significant escalation? I think it is a much greater attack than those that we have seen in the past under similar circumstances. But I still think that it fits within the kind of waltz that's going on between the US and Iran right now, which says Iran might be allowed to attack oil tankers, or maybe not allowed to attack, but that in the event that Iran carries out these attacks against oil tankers, that the US will respond, but it will respond in a relatively limited way, which means that it's not attacking Tehran, and it's not going after individuals within the Iranian regime, and it's not interrupting the funeral processions, which are on and on and on, for the former supreme leader Ali Khamenei. And they will not be attacking government institutions or military installations that are outside of that area of the Straits of Hormuz. So to me, this might be a greater, much larger attack than those that we've seen in the past. But I don't think that it's a significant escalation. And I don't think it kind of sidetracks the ongoing discussions, which ought to have taken 60 days and I think are now into like almost 20 days of negotiations between the US and Iran towards that final agreement. We have no idea where all of that stands right now, but I don't think it really sidetracks any of that. But clearly a major incident yesterday in the Straits of Hormuz. I think ultimately, though, that when the US thinks about attacking Iran and trying to prevent it from stopping ships, tankers from sailing through the Straits of Hormuz, I think that the economic side of the war was probably the most effective one that was applied by the US, which means, you know, clearly sanctioning sales of oil and movements of international currency by the Iranian regime, and really stopping them from being able to earn their income, mostly through preventing sales of oil. And I just wonder whether the US has thought about that. There were some sanctions that had been lifted and that were reapplied as a result of yesterday's attacks. But I still think that it doesn't really sidetrack anything that's been going on in the background.
It does, though, make it very clear that the United States dare not pull all of the troops out the area. It needs to make sure that that Iran is compliant. Did Iran even give a reason why they just decided to start attacking?
Well, I don't. I think the reason was relatively clear, that the Revolutionary Guard have said these are the lanes that
you should sail in when going through
the Straits of Hormuz, and people don't adhere to those lanes. And by the way, it should also be added that Iran responded to these attacks by the United States by firing again at Gulf countries, Bahrain, also.
And Kuwait,
you know, the war is not over in that area yet, because those countries are still getting fired on with Iranian missiles. And I agree with you that the Americans don't dare take their troops out of the area for now. And if one really believes the narrative or the conspiracy that's been put together that says that President Trump wanted a certain hiatus in this war and that he doesn't necessarily intend to end it right now, that he's just going through a process of trying to take a breather and that he will return to the war a little later on, then clearly, of course, there's no reason for the US military to vacate their positions in this area. All of that, of course, will only play out later in the year. We know that the US midterms are coming up. We know that the Israeli election is coming up. I don't know to what extent those are influencing factors in terms of the president's decision and what he's doing right now.
Let's just talk about the fact that President Trump has arrived for the NATO summit in Turkey. This whole relationship is also a little bit perplexing, given the comments about the selling of aircrafts, etc. What is going on there now?
Well, I think Turkey, as I've said a few times, is in a very interesting and complicated relationship with the United States. Turkey is a critical member of NATO, given its proximity to Russia. Let's not forget that the reason that NATO was set up in the first place was in response to the establishment of the so-called Warsaw Pact, which established Eastern European countries together as in some sort of a military constellation against the West. NATO was the response, the West's response to the Warsaw Pact. So it was, the lines were clearly drawn between Russia and those countries that were under Russia's influence, and the United States and Western Europe and the countries that were under their influence. And in that particular constellation, Turkey was right on the border, right on the firing line between East and West, and therefore a very, very critical member of NATO. It also serves to keep a very careful eye on Russia and to keep a very careful watch on the entrance and exit to the Black Sea, where Russia has a significant naval force and Turkey clearly can control that. So the fact that the NATO summit is taking place in Ankara and the president has arrived on his new Qatari-sponsored Air Force One with great fanfare, and he was received at the bottom of the stairs by President Erdogan, you know, signals that the relationship between the United States on the face of things and Turkey looks okay and good, and the president has made some very kind remarks about President Erdogan, which not everybody is able to not everybody else gets such kind remarks from the President of the United States. So it all looks good on the face of things. But we can't forget that when President Trump said, "Where is NATO?" when the war with Iran was at its peak, he didn't point to Turkey as a member of NATO. He pointed to countries in Western Europe, Italy and France and Germany and the United Kingdom. And those countries, he said, where is NATO when we need them to help us? Because Turkey, of course, doesn't fall on that side of the fence where the war against extremist Islam comes into existence. So now all of a sudden, the NATO imperative seems to have twisted a little bit. And instead of fighting against Russia, which continues to be a battle for NATO, there is a certain turn now which says NATO needs to somehow be willing to fight against extremism, extremist Islamism, and Iran, and countries like that, which could potentially threaten Western Europe and NATO. Turkey doesn't fit well into that particular constellation, because Turkey really falls out on the other side of this particular battle. And so that's where the whole thing becomes very, very complicated, when NATO's vision and objective is changing a little, or perhaps is being added to. Instead of being focused on Russia and Russian influenced countries, it's now also about extremist Islamism, and Turkey becomes a very complicated partner where that's concerned. And of course, Prime Minister Netanyahu has come out saying he doesn't support the decision by the United States to sell Turkey these F-35 fighters. And interestingly, Secretary of War Pete Hegseth is supposed to arrive in Israel today, supposedly to placate the Israeli government. He's due to meet with Prime Minister Netanyahu and Minister of Defense Israel Katz to placate them about the sale of these F-35s to Turkey. Turkey and Israel are on a warpath, and there seems to be no way of reconciling their positions. Turkey is taking a very, very extreme position against Israel, and one could have potentially seen in the future some sort of a military operation against Turkey, except for the fact that Turkey is a member of NATO, and any attack against Turkey effectively requires the rest of NATO right away to respond. So I can't see a military operation happening between Israel and Turkey, but it's a very complicated situation and very unpleasant for Israel to watch President Trump land in Ankara with all the reception that he's received there. Complicated, very, very complicated.
Very, very much so. That's where we leave it. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. You can catch Anthony tomorrow morning for the Israel Report at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.